Barry Mulligan from the comeback game inspired Unstoppable. Pretty privileged today to have a friend and good guy, Lord Kim Barrett, on the show. Kim will tell you a bit about himself, but basically he's a phenomenal marketer, specialised in the realm of Facebook marketing. Known Kim for, what, 2 or 3 years now?
Yeah.
Amazing guy, seen some pretty phenomenal growth within your business, your social voice. So excited to have you on board to talk a bit about your journey.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So, mate, to the guys out there that might not know you or know who you are, explain who you are and explain how you got granted your lordship.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I'll come back to that in just a sec. So I've been marketing online since I was 15 years old. So it's funny, when I looked at my story, if you will, the other day, I forget all the stuff I did when I was a little kid, 15, mm-hmm. Actually the first online sale I made was $45,000 worth of advertising for a forum that I was a moderator of. And I kind of slipped my mind the other day until people said, when did you start doing online marketing? And I was I always think when my business started, but it's I've always been doing it before that, a ton. And so when I went back and looked at it, I was that was my first sale. And then I was that's actually pretty decent. Most people these days probably still haven't made in one sale. It's pretty good. Yeah. With just emails from a 15-year-old kid behind a keyboard. So that was pretty cool. So that's my background has always been in technology, playing with stuff online. As far back as I can remember, my dad always had us on computers. And I worked in companies in doing marketing and helping them with marketing as well. So accounting firms, IT companies. Grain Trading was the last company I worked with. And I always saw that was kind of the lifeblood of a business. It was that if they didn't have the phones ringing, if they weren't out there and putting themselves out there, nothing happened. Mm-hmm. So I said, that's something I want to help people with.
Yeah.
And ever since then I said, okay, that's going to be the focus of whatever I do. And at the time, Facebook ads were still quite new. So I've been playing with them since they came out pretty much in, the latter half, the end of 2007-08 kind of thing. And then in about 2012, I started to take them more seriously and doing a lot more with them and tweaking, playing and adjusting with stuff. And then I said, wow, this is, especially because of how much information Facebook had, I just thought this is where I've got to focus and stay. Mm-hmm. And I always just said, cool, I'm just going to focus on this. And if I do this really well, surely the rest, everything else can be kind of figured out. And if I do that, then at least I have a specialty.
Yeah,
I have something that I can say, well, I don't do it just everything. I do one thing really, really well, and that's ads. And that's, that was the focus, and then that's what spawned into your social voice.
Yeah, and so that was 10 years ago that you really kind of got serious about playing it. At the time, you're working for other people, is that right?
Yeah, so I always worked with other people, and so I'd always looking at stuff on the side because I had my own little supplement business I did with my brother, which we marketed for a while, and then I also always did affiliate marketing and different things, so people would put products out, and because of when, that's what I did in the early days when I was 15, was people would promote their products on our forum, and we would get a certain percentage, and then we'd also sell advertising space based on the number of people that came to our site. And the other guys couldn't ever sell any, but they didn't know how to kind of package it up, so I started packaging it up and selling it. And I was like, oh, so cool, we send these people, they buy and then they give us money. Cool. And then I didn't know what it was at the time. It was 2 years later when I was 18. I was oh, that's affiliate marketing. Oh, that's cool. I was this is just cool. People just giving me money for nothing. I just tell people to use their stuff. And then I was the dots started connecting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's ultimate leverage, isn't it? We were talking before off camera around joint ventures and the possibilities that exist within joint ventures and how a lot of people hear them in business, a joint venture creating relationships between two people and two seemingly separate businesses with the same kind of common, the common niche or the common clientele. But I think a lot of people tend to complicate things.
Oh yeah.
Look at you as an 18-year-old, affiliate marketing, making money, didn't have to have your own product or business per se, you just had to know how to connect these people with this product over here and take your cut in the middle.
Yeah.
So tell me, looking back over life then over the last kind of 10 years, so you've had your social voice for 3 to 4 years now?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. What were some of the challenges you experienced pre getting into business?
How do you mean, pre getting into business, before I started?
Yeah, yeah. So what were some of the challenges you had? So you worked with other people in the same fields, marketing?
Yeah, so I worked in a lot of time, management of certain areas. The grain trade was foreign trade, Forex, and then also helping with the marketing side of things as well.
Yeah.
The biggest things, and the reason why I took the jump to do my own stuff is because I couldn't really accelerate any faster. It's like, cool, if I could go and bring in $300,000 in sales for canola oil or canola seed to somewhere else, but it's like, cool, I didn't get paid anymore. And then when I finished all my work, I couldn't exactly do anything else. It's not like, whereas if you have your own business, like, you can always work on things. But there, it's like, cool, my boss was overseas doing deals, and I was sitting there, it's like, well, I'm sitting here sometimes just twiddling my thumbs. Like, what am I, you know, there's gonna be more that I can do than this. And that's when I started going, well, I'm getting good results doing some of this marketing stuff and ads. Why don't I see if other people want me to do it as well?
Yeah.
And, you know, but to probably to preface that and to address your question properly is that I didn't really know the value of what I was doing or what to do with it. So, for example, I had people that they sold my sister and I built a house and we sold it just when I started my business. And I said to them, I was like talking to them about marketing and blah, blah, blah. And ended up like the same day that they sold our house, I signed them as a client. But I was charging them like $250 a month for stuff. And like, it was taking me a lot of time. I didn't really think about how many hours and stuff it was gonna take me. And I made a lot of mistakes by that, but not understanding, number one, the value, but number two, then how to charge for it at the beginning. I was just like, cool, I feel like I want $250 a month more, and then I'll just chuck that out there. But I didn't actually think about it very well and plan it out at the start.
So when did that change then? Like, when did you realize that there was a problem there, or that something needed to change, and how did you go about changing it?
The first thing was I found a mentor to help me out. So our mutual mentor, I spoke to him. The way that I framed and fixed it for myself, because I still wasn't quite comfortable in charging. So I got told to go from like $1,000 a month to like $5,000 a month to charge five times more. And I'm like, whoa, there was all the, you know, like the blocks and limitations. It's like, am I going to be able to provide that value, and am I worth that money too? And then I said, well, my mentor was like, how much do you charge? And he's like, sometimes $20,000, $50,000 a month. I'm like, well, he's charging $20,000 a month. I'm only going to charge $5,000. And if I need to, I can ask him for help. So these guys are actually getting a discount because I can ask him for help. So that's the kind of, I reframed it to myself and going, well, I can charge $5,000 because I'm getting help from the guy charging $20,000. So these guys are going to get a great deal, regardless. So I was able to do that by going, well, I can leverage what I know will bring them value. So if I'm not hitting the mark, I know that I can reach out and help from someone who charges tremendously more than that. And that was kind of the way that I got around my...
So you found a way to almost checkmate and leverage yourself to validate and justify to yourself that, to make yourself feel okay about it. It wasn't like, well, no, I'm not going to do this. It's like, okay, well, what needs to happen for you to feel okay about this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, how can I feel good about charging them that amount of money? Because before, it's like, even at $1,000, like, is it okay if I charge you $1,000?
Yeah.
And it's like, be all worried about it. But then it was like, well, cool, yes, it's $5. It's like, well, I'm going to be getting help from someone who charges $20, so you can go, they'll charge you $20, I'm only going to charge you $5. Yeah. And I'll be able to ask them for feedback and help you out and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I had to, that was a justification to myself. So then it became a bit easier.
Yeah. And how long did it take you to start selling that price product?
I started selling it, I made a sale pretty much straight away as soon as I made that price point.
Yeah.
And but it's funny because after I found out, like a year later, that person had actually previously used my mentor and was paying them $25,000 a month. So then I was like, no wonder he jumped at paying me $5 when previously he'd been paying, and he didn't know the connection. I didn't know the connection until later.
How random was that he showed up of all people?
Yeah. And so he was like, I'm like, cool, we'll do all this sort of stuff. And obviously it would have been similar inclusions as what the other offer would have been. And he's like, and how much? And I was like, $5. He's like, so can I do that by MasterCard? I'm like, yes, you can pay. Yes, of course. And I was like, I don't even have a merchant facility. Like, normally people just transfer me $1,000. It's like, I'll just take his card details and figure out how to charge it later on. I was like, cool. And I was like, how am I going to process this?
Yeah. And I like that. What I'm already picking up is that ability that you have to say yes and then work out how.
Yeah.
You know, like, be okay to take on board the feedback. And I think that that's definitely a sign that I've seen in a lot of successful people, is that they're completely open and willing to listen and then ask greater questions themselves to work out how they can see that through. So tell me that over the last 3 years in business, what have been some of the challenges that you faced as a business owner, both in business and outside of business, that's led to, you know, you being where you are right now?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably like one of the biggest ones is not being on people enough and kind of accepting it. And one of our mutual friend, Charlie, said to me the other day, it's like the biggest cost in business is average people. Because good people, you're like, they're epic. I want to keep them around, do as much as possible. Bad people, you're like, you're bad, you must go. But if they're in the middle, they're neither good nor bad, so they kind of stay around a lot longer than them.
There's a decision there.
Yeah, you're like, well, they're not doing a bad job, but they're not doing a good job. And it's like little things may happen along the way that are bad, but it's not like a whole heap of bad stuff all at once. And I think I probably accepted that for a long, like a very long period of time, where it's like, cool, yeah, like this person's doing all right. Oh, this problem happened. Ah, oh, that's all good. Don't worry about that. You're a good, like, good bloke, you know, a good lady, like, well done. And keeping for that, I think that's probably been the biggest one. It's not going, well, actually, I want world-class epicness, the best. So I can't have like average, like they can be great people, but I cannot have that. That's not going to be conducive to the goals and what I want to achieve. If I was just super chilled, living on a beach and not doing too much and not having heaps of clients and wasn't like trying to promote that I'm doing amazing, like world-class stuff, then it probably didn't matter. But when I'm like, cool, I want to be the best, then I need to have the best around, otherwise it's not going to work. So I think that was probably the biggest one, is accepting like averageness across the board, with especially with staff, and going, well, actually, it's like I should have, you know, been much quicker to fire and hire, and but more specific when I hire and put in more hoops to jump through to get better people.
Would you agree that that relates to life as well, though, is being clear on what you're willing to tolerate and what you're not willing to tolerate? Be clear on your standards, be clear, you know, what integrity looks like integrity to self looks like. And having staff that aren't performing at the level, you're out of integrity with yourself by keeping them on board. You're not doing them a favor, you're not doing yourself a favor, and you're certainly not doing your clients a favor either.
Yeah.
It was interesting because one thing that someone said to me recently is, okay, so if you were paying for your program right now, or if you're paying for this program, what's the experience you'd expect for that amount of money? And the staff that are delivering that, or people delivering that, would you be happy to pay them that amount of money for the quality of work they are delivering? And is there something better that's available out there?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, yeah, you don't get what you want or aspire to, like you get what you tolerate.
Yeah.
It's definitely the biggest thing. And, you know, I started, and even at the end of last year just gone, I said to everyone, there was a story about a place in the northern Kimberleys of WA.
Yeah.
And they have, so something like $3,000 per night, and there's no cell reception, anything like that. But when you're there, when you come in, you have beautiful on the cliffs looking over the ocean for the Kimberleys. You go in and the chef sits you down and personally talks to you while he's cooking the meal, tells you the origin of the food. This is a kangaroo we caught yesterday. This is why we eat kangaroo, all these sorts of things. And they take you out to excursions to the gorges with their own personal. I think they have like a almost like an Aboriginal tracker go with you and explain the nature and all this sort of stuff. And at the core, at the bottom of it, when they were explaining all this stuff, they said that paying $3,000 a night, we ask every division, so food, accommodation, travel and experience, with that from when you come there, everyone has to deliver $3,000 worth of value in their own individual areas. And it's like, if you don't feel like you delivered $3,000 in value that day to that customer, you're doing something wrong. And so I sat to the guys and I said, well, cool, same thing. If we charge, let's say, $5,000 a month, when they speak to our manager, they need to feel like they've gotten that in that month. When they speak to someone in funnels, they need to feel like they got $5,000 of value in funnels in that month, in ads or whatever it might be. So it's like, treat each of it as that you're like solely feel like they're giving you that money and that's your responsibility to deliver on that. And like when I started looking at that, I did make a few changes like straight away and going, cool. Same thing as like a lot of people when they have a buyer online program or like even marketing, it's like, well, you pay for something and it's almost like thin air.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I just spent $20,000 on this, but
where is
it? Yeah, I have nothing in front of
me.
So like we designed up these welcome packs and things like that. And you know, I started looking at things like when you buy like an Apple iPhone or and all this sort of stuff, and like even just the packaging and the way it's presented, we made big changes in the way that we did everything so that cool, when you get it, like they get a gift basket that's worth like, so $100. And we put like a bottle of like Moët or like champagne in or whatever. And it's like, they feel like they're a rock star. But it's like, well, you just did just give me $5,000. I spent $100. But then they feel like they've already got more value than even though they just gave you $5,000.
Yeah.
And things like that to make people's experience better.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, people are only ever spending money for an emotional experience.
Yeah.
Right? They believe that it's the car that they want because mine's broken down, or no, I'm hungry, so I'm going to go and buy this food, or I'm thirsty, I want to buy a coffee, or I want to live looking out of the water, so I'm going to buy this house. But ultimately, what they're really seeking is the emotional experience of that, how it feels to not be driving that shitbox around anymore, or how it feels to be driving the Ferrari around, how it feels to sit down and have that lunch or drink that coffee, or, you know, rock up home in that house at the night time. So we're only ever experiencing or spending money to acquire something of value that we believe. And like you said, if you can provide a 4x return on that value or perceived value in terms of, okay, I spent $5,000, you're going to generate them a ton of leads and a ton of business. But that's kind of down the track, and that's almost expected from them.
Yeah.
Right, that's expected. How can you deliver them a wow experience that they don't expect? How can you go above and beyond to experience something that they don't expect? And it's the small things. It's the small things in life. Like, you know, I was at a hotel yesterday in Melbourne and sitting there having a meeting with this lady. My kids are kind of a bit loose, running around all over the place. And this guy goes and says, oh, hey, would you like a cup of tea? And got him a cup of tea. Didn't charge us for it. And I went and got him a marshmallow and didn't charge us for it. Then went and found some colouring in books and said, oh, hey, here's for you guys. Like, I went above and beyond, never asked for any of it. But that left a really good impression for me, of that hotel and of the staff of the hotel. And something so small like that would have me going back to those guys whenever I'm in Melbourne and need a place to stay.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where I suppose understanding too, like, what's the lifetime value of your client? If you go and onboard a client, they have a shitty experience and they stay for 1 month and leave, you know, you just lost potentially, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year worth of retainer, which could be for you worth, you know, $60,000, $120,000, $180,000 for the sake of, like you said, a $100 welcome pack, or, you know, a certain way that you guys speak to the clients on the phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's so big for business in doing that and just understanding that process. But as well, like, the big thing I always like to think of is, like, treat people how you want to be treated. And it's like, I love, and I was so annoyed this Christmas, and I took it personally, right? So I love at Christmas getting gift baskets.
Really?
Yeah, right? Like, I just feel it's a great experience. When it rocks up, I'm like, oh, cool. And it's like, you know, you look and it's like wine and crackers and all sort of stuff. I just like the experience of, like, receiving gifts. And I sent all of our clients, sent all of them gift baskets, because I know I would care about them. But apart from one of just a friend of mine who said, gave me something, but it's like, no one, like, reciprocated in kind, right? Like, I didn't get, and normally, especially in businesses, like, very corporate.
Assholes!
Yeah, right? But I just thought, well, actually, the way I took it is, well, I didn't do a good enough job this year where they said, far out, I need to thank him at Christmas. Like, I just need to give him a little something.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I said, cool, this, my goal next year
is everyone to buy a gift basket.
I want people going in and be like, actually, I've got no more room for gift baskets. You know what I mean? Like, and not that I want them from a factor, but it's like, well, I didn't leave a good enough impression this year for people to go, actually, you know what? Like, Christmas time, I want to send them just a little something to say thanks, even just a card, right? So it's like, I feel that when I've had a good experience, I go, actually, I'm going to do a little something for them at Christmas. And that may just be the way that I operate, but I feel like there's a lot of people similar and going, well, cool, this year, how can I just give it so tremendous that they go, wow, I just want to do something, like, for you in kind, because you left such a good impression. So that was my goal for 2018 Christmas, is to see if I can increase. Well, it's gonna, if I get one, it's a 100% increase, right? So it's, great success.
Yeah, I love that. I especially love how, and this is a trait that I notice in a lot of successful business owners, is that ability to straight away take the feedback and take responsibility for the feedback.
Yeah.
Right? Not like, oh, I didn't get it, they don't love me, you know. Yeah. But to go, okay, I'm going to take that as, I actually didn't do a good enough job, and I'm going to make my personal mission. They don't have any friggin' idea that you just take it personally, that they were too busy to buy you a bloody Christmas basket. They have no idea, but they're going to wonder why all of a sudden their service has gone next level, and just maybe, they'll think about you next Christmas.
Yeah.
But I love that. I love that your ability to take that and go, well, hang on, we didn't do a good enough job. How can we do better? And I think in today's society, that's what's going to see a business strive and succeed in years to come, is businesses that aren't complacent, going, well, you know, we're $5,000 a month and we provide $20,000 worth a month sales for our clients, we're all good, you know, because that's complacency. And that's not changing the game. That's not finding a way to constantly step up. Because I don't know if you're going to relate, but many years ago, I used to own a kitchen company, and every 6 months, I would personally call every single client in my books, like even clients we'd worked with 5 years ago, and I'd get feedback every 6 months. Hey, how's your kitchen going? How's your bathroom going? Anything we can come around and touch up or fix up or adjust, da da da. Just want to get some feedback. You know, how'd you find service with us? And I used to get pissed off because I'd ask the question like, what if we were to do something even better than what we've done, what would that be? And I used to get pissed off because like majority of people would say, no, like your service is amazing. Like we couldn't ask for any more. One person said, oh, the only thing you do better is have less choices because we thought we had too many choices in your showroom that we found it hard to pick. But that used to annoy me because I was constantly seeking and searching for the gap.
Yeah.
And I think when a lot of people start business, they often, or many people start business competing against somebody else in the marketplace. Well, we can go out there and we can be better than this person, or we can do better than this person, or you know, we can have better product or service. But when you get to a point where you are, and you know that you are, and your business is growing, like where's that gauger? Like where's that hunger to take things to the next level? If you can't compete against yourself, I think you're going to end up moving to a place where you experience some of that complacency.
Yeah, and that's where I think it comes down to the personalization of the service, as you said, like calling them. Like there was a place in Bali that someone was telling me about, and basically when you get there, every single staff knows your name, where you came from. Yes. Like, Barry, you just came from Perth? I love Perth. It's great. How's that King's
Park? They've stalked you on Facebook and Instagram and
And then I think that's the level it comes to. And then we're talking again with our buddy Charlie. He's like, imagine if there was, actually I won't say it because he may do this, right? But he said it as a joke, but it probably will happen. Where you have a service where you go, cool, their kid just graduated high school. You send them their kid a present for their kid's graduation.
Gary does stuff like this, right? Yeah. He seeks out people, finds out what they have interest in, and sends them specific memorabilia and stuff to that need. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And the same, like I remember, I think it was Brian Kurt saying as well, he's like, always like every week, it was one of his like KPIs for himself, is that every week he would have something on his desk that he would have to send out to someone, just to build a relationship. They may not have even bought from them before or anything, but like, cool, oh, I remember Barry said he likes this, or I saw this book, so I've got it. And you may not send it straight away, but he just started like picking out little things when it would remind him of people. And then he's like, every week now he has one in his desk, cool, I'm gonna send this out. Just send it out with a nice little handwritten note. And I think those are the level of things where, especially when it's like people now, I think are like, it's much more personable. They wanna be building those relationships. It's like, well, when someone cares, that's when it gets to a different level. When someone actually like truly deeply cares, and even when you like just a little gift, it's like when you've taken the process to thought about that and do it, then you know, I know this person cares.
Yeah.
And I know it's gonna make a little bit, and it's like, it's just a little smile on their face for that day, and you're just showing that, but that's what they'll remember.
Yeah. So it's not even the gift basket, it's almost an expression of love, it's an expression of someone, it's my mum, I think, used to always say, that's the thought that counts.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the thought that counts. It's actually, you can send them a blank gift basket and just like a card saying, thinking of you. Like, you'd probably be disappointed because there's no money in there, right? But it's the thought that counts. And equally too, business in this day and age is very different than what it was 5 years ago. There was less competition back then. You could get away with doing a reasonable job because, you know, people would buy your services. Whereas this day and age, it's like you can walk out as your client today and go and find 100 of them, you know, Facebook marketing companies tomorrow to go and work with. Maybe not as going to do as good a job, but who knows?
Yeah.
And so I think that you're right. I think that, you know, business is a lot more personable, and I think that relationships are what is going to see your business grow and succeed. Not just your business, but your life. You know, building quality relationships as opposed to just offering a product and a service that fixes someone's problem.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. What's been the biggest challenge you've had in life today? Like, if you look back, business and personal, and you look back, what has been the biggest problem or the biggest challenge that you've ever faced?
That's a great one. I think probably for me, it would be willing to let go would be mine. And by what I mean by that is that I mostly for me, it comes again back down to relationships. And it's like, I had a great group of friends that I am still good friends with, but spending all my time with them was not really serving what I wanted to do and achieve. And it probably took me longer than it really should have to be willing to kind of let go and not be fazed by those relationships. And, you know, because now it's like the same, like, they jump on my lives, they give me like, you know, like they still like throw like love my way, but it's not the same. It's like I don't see them really that often, and you know, even when I'm here, like I still try and catch up on occasion with them where I can, but not like it used to be. Mm. Whereas like used to be, it's like, cool, every day when we finish work, we'd go hang out. And then on the weekends, we'd be, you know, like someone would have a party or we'd be going out pretty much Friday, Saturday night all the time. And now, like then it's like if I had been willing and going, well, actually, I know I want to do this stuff, but oh no, I want to hang out with the guys. It's like if I had been able to make that decision earlier, many things would probably be different. But I think being confident enough to go, actually, you know, like, I need to do this and it's going to be hard and there'll be a period of time where things are changing and be willing to accept the willing to accept the change, you know, like, it would be a very different, like, lots of things would probably be different to they are today. And I can't tell whether good or bad, like, you know, everything that's happened has led me to it now, which is great. So,
yeah.
But that's probably one of the things I think as well. It's like, it's hard to accept and be willing to go through what the next period of pain or change is. Like, you know, we were just discussing in Singapore, like having to let people go, and it's like straight away your mind goes to the conversation and then what's going to happen after that, you know. And you're like, that's two periods of pain I'm going to have to go through. But when you get there, it's actually not that bad, but you know, the anticipated change and pain I think is always much worse. And I probably let myself for a long period of time live in that area of going, well, this is what it's going to feel like, so I won't do it. It's like, well, actually, you're never going to know unless you do make the change.
Yeah, the pain is in the hesitation.
Yeah.
We ran an event last month and we actually went and bought a bunch of arrows, you know, like bow and arrows.
Yeah.
And we did this exercise where we got our participants to snap them with their neck.
Yeah.
And so they put the point in the arrow in the soft part of their neck, and their partner would stand there with their hands out and they would have to walk into the arrow and the arrow would break. And you know, we ended up doing it a bit Hollywood where we got some disclaimers and got them all to sign agreements to opt us out of any legal binding accidents if anything might have happened. And you know, the whole point was just that, is that there was all this fear around, you know, what if it hurts? What if it stabs me, blah, blah. Like, it's never going to happen. Like, it's been done a million times before. But what we found is that the people that hesitated to walk into the arrow were the ones that experienced, like, bits of bruises and pain. And I actually held this arrow for this one woman. And when she went to lean into it, I thought, shit, this thing's not going to break, because I could feel it was just pointing in quite hard. But yet another one I did it for, there was none of that at all, because she walked straight into it. And so the pain was in the hesitation. And you're exactly right, is if you look at life, the most painful things right now is the pain of the unknown.
Yeah.
You know, we're habitually creatures of habit, and it's the uncertainty that we struggle often to lean into, or that the most pain is leaning into that. And then, you know, like you mentioned, keeping those staff members on because it wasn't so painful that you needed to get rid of them, but it wasn't, you know, pleasurable enough, or you didn't think there's enough pleasure to get rid of them either, that the pain was actually there through keeping them rather than just having the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, same, maybe you can remember breaking up with a girl back in the day, you know, the thought of having to break up with her and all that, as opposed to like just ripping the band-aid off, just doing it and then dealing with whatever comes out the other side.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that was like probably the biggest thing for me. And now being cool, like being much more willing to change, go with the flow. Like, I'll be honest, there's still sometimes points in head, like I still go but then I'm like, all right, cool, you've got to learn from what happened in the past and be willing to go through that now.
Yeah what do you think has been the biggest trait or characteristic that's allowed you to be, you know, where you are now? You know, from what I've seen, you're achieving quite a lot of success, you're getting some amazing results for clients, bringing on some amazing clients, bringing on phenomenal staff. What do you think has been the biggest trait or characteristic that you've held through this that's allowed you to get to where you are right now? Because life is built with its inherent problems and challenges. Like, no one's outside of that system. We all have it.
Yeah.
What have been those traits that have allowed you to be where you are today?
I think the biggest is ability and willingness and speed of implementation of things. Because I think most people, like, for me, it's like, cool, give me a roadmap and I'll follow it to the T. And I'll get it done and I'll do it right now. Whereas I think a lot of people wait and they won't do it. Like, I've been in groups with people where, let's just say they're gonna learn how to do an ad or a funnel, they probably still haven't done one 2 years later. Whereas the first day I learned it, I did it and I kept doing it every single day. And like, I was Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, right? And the reason why I did, like I've done before, like boxing, kickboxing and things like that, the reason I did the best at Jiu-Jitsu and I liked it is because literally everything, there is a specific process to get to it.
Mm.
It's like, cool, you do this, move, and it's like chess. And it's just like, you follow the instructions and you'll get the end outcome. Mm. It's like, as soon as you have one gap in it, someone else can, they can escape or something, the opposite will happen. But as long as you execute to the plan, then it will, like, you're pretty much guaranteed to win. So it's like, all I did was got really good at one move in jiu-jitsu, which is Americana, and I just, every time it's like smash, it's like, if I get into the right spot, it's like, you're being submitted by an Americana. There's no other outcome, because I know I can follow and execute that to the T.
Yeah.
So for me, like, as soon as I get them, I would just do it straight away. And so, for example, like, I have a mentor who helps us with sales, and he's like, cool, add this into your process. And then I messaged him like 2 hours later, it's like, cool, it's done. He's like, what? And it's like, the thing you told me to do, well, I've done it, and so I'll tell you how it goes tomorrow. And he's like, man, you just get stuff done, don't you? I was like, well, they're like, why would I wait, you know? Like, if someone tells me, cool, this is how you set up an ad, straight away, I'll have the ad done in half an hour. Like, I joined a group the other day, there's one of my buddies has a group where he releases hacks all the time, and he showed this one hack around a certain style of ad. And he's like, I wonder who will get it done. I was like, bro, I've already done it 4 times. Like, I've done it for 4 different clients. I'm testing it at the moment. I just immediately do it. So it's like, as soon as I hear an instruction, it's like, you know, I go see my accountant. It's like, cool, you've got to make these changes, like, next day. Like, I just make sure as soon as I can do something, I don't hesitate or wait on it. I just try and immediately take action upon it.
Yeah. Has it always been like that, or is that something you've learned?
Generally speaking, I reckon 99% of the time it's been pretty much immediate things when I got told to do it and follow an instruction. And that's what, like, if it's there, it's just simple for me. And it's like, well, if there's an instruction or there's a roadmap or a thing, like, why would you not just do it?
Yeah.
And I think so many...
Don't the wheel, right?
Yeah. Everyone's just trying to, like, complicate things.
Mm.
And it's like, I get so frustrated sometimes, like, I'll give instructions, I'll stand there and I'll go through exactly how this is, say, set up a funnel, do this, and I'll do it with people. I get a message a week later, Kim, this thing's broken. Cool, let me have a look. And that changed everything. I was like, nowhere in my steps or instructions was there a thing that said, change all of this shit.
Yeah.
Like, why did you do that? Oh, but I thought I wanted to do this instead. I was like, well, I gave you the exact roadmap for you to be able to achieve success in that thing. Why would you not just do it? And it's like the same, like, all the time. Like, even at uni, when I was going to go to uni, I found out, I was like, cool, what do I need to do to get into university? You need to get a 70% average. I was like, cool. Well, there's no way that I'm going to be working to get 100% or 90% or 80% of my tests when I know that what I need to achieve is 70% and I'm in university. Cool. So I did exactly what I needed in school to get 70%. I think I got 71% afterwards. And they were like, cool, you're into uni. And then everyone's like, well, you could have won ducks. I was like, but that wasn't my goal. My goal was to get into uni.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if I got ducks of the school. Yeah. I need to get into university. And then I spent all the rest of my time on forums selling advertising and stuff like that, you know, like doing stuff that I found fun.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. Yeah, why complicate things? Why reinvent the wheel? Like, there's a process or system or a structure or strategy, just do it.
Yeah.
Just follow suit. Cool. What's some advice you give to the guys out there that are watching this, listening to this right now, that are, you know, in business, maybe struggling, you know, maybe looking to take things to the next level? What advice would you give them?
I think the biggest one to start off with is ask for help. I think until I did that, I kind of still struggled. Remember, I was in a couple of different mastermind groups, and one that I was paying a reasonable amount of money for, they messaged me and said, hey, like, I feel like you're just kind of sitting on the sidelines, like, just watching. And it's like, well, like, I don't really want, like, I know a little bit of stuff already, and I don't want to feel like I'm taking away from anyone else. It's like, well, how are you going to improve then if you don't ask for help? And I was like, oh, cool. So I immediately posted up something that I needed help with. And as soon as I did that, it's like I started getting tremendous results just from the feedback. And I was like, wow, why did I wait so long to be willing to ask for help? And now it's like, cool, as soon as I have things, it's like, if I feel like my cash flow or books are not working properly, I'm on the phone to my friend Frank, who's my like advisor. I'm like, hey man, this is the problem. Like, I need help. Like, what do I do in this scenario? And then the same anything. It's like, now, as soon as I can, I'm like, who's the best person I can ask for help and get it straight away?
Yeah.
It's like, people treat things so differently and uniquely, but it's like, cool. If you break your foot, you go to the hospital straight away. You ask for help and get it plastered. It's not like, nah, it's going to heal itself. Like,
yeah, I'd be able to quit, mate.
Yeah, just don't worry
about that. I'm committed to like manifesting my way to health right now.
Yeah, exactly. I've been pretty healthy before. I feel like if I just think about it a lot, it'll probably heal really well. You know, I Google MD. It's like how to fix a broken foot and just plaster it yourself or something.
Yeah.
So just ask someone who's been successful in it for help before.
I find it so interesting. Like, I've spent a lot of time selling. I've spent like hours and hours and hours and hours and hours on the phone. And what still never ceases to amaze me is the people that you know, step forward because they're wanting some form of help or wanting to go to the next level. And then when they're put in the position to make a choice to keep following that path of making change, there's the objections or the excuses. I haven't got the money, I haven't got the time. You know what, I've been thinking since the last conversation and I'm really committed to it for me right now. I feel I need to prove something to myself and do it for me right now. You know, and it never ceases to amaze me that these people often end up calling us back up a year later, 2 years later, saying, hey, I'm ready now.
Yeah.
I'm ready now. And you know what, if they just had to like cut the BS to start with and just followed through on their commitment and their integrity themselves around like, I need some help. Yeah. I need to find people that are out there. Like, my job is like, I'm really awesome at doing ads. I'm not the most amazing at training my guys in sales. You know, I'm really awesome at making lemonade. I'm not the most amazing at creating ads or generating new leads, and find people in that area that experience a lot less stress in life. Like I said, why complicate things?
Yeah.
Like, there's a strategy or system out there for any problem that anyone has.
Yeah.
You know, find someone who's overcome that and resolved that and solved that, and ask them questions, take them out for lunch, you know, buy their programs, sign up to their courses.
Yeah, and I think, like, I don't know, like, whether it's perceived ego or just, like, issues in ourselves where we go, actually, you know, like, I don't want to seem weak. And I don't know, I would, and this might be just be a wild approximation, I probably think that guys are worse at it than girls. So I would say that it's a much harder for, from my experience, from what I've seen, like, I get so many ladies that tell me, it's like, Kim, my shit's in shambles, I need help. And then the guys are like, what do you mean? I'm doing epically, man.
Yeah, pride.
Yeah, do you know how well I did? And it's like, you know, like the whole, the male ego and pride thing where it's like, cool, it's like, I'm willing to go, hey, like, actually, I have no idea on this stuff because I'm never going to be able to grow if I have that thought. And it's like, well, I know, and I've been hit before where it's like, cool, as soon as you think that you know something, you know enough, and you don't need help, it's like, as soon as you will take a hit and go down.
Yeah.
And that's why it's like...
The universe will re-correct you.
Yeah, that's why I love jiu-jitsu. And it's like, because every time it's like, I liken it to business so much because it's like, as soon as you go, I'm boss, like, especially when you're a white girl, at the very beginning, like, I'm good. And it's like, cool. You know, my instructor, and I think it was probably very humbling. So I'm like, pretty big dude, 6'4".
Yeah.
6'2", sorry, not 6'4". Pretty heavy. My instructor was about 5'4" and 50 kilos, brown belt. And as soon as the first day I went in, I was like, what am I going to learn from this guy? And just like after 15 minutes of being choked out and nearly had my arm broken and stuff like that, I was like, cool. Like, I absolutely don't care. I'm always like, I'm never going to think that I'm good enough, because I know that there's always someone bigger and badder who's had more experience that I can learn from. So it's like, why should I be consistently choked out? And it's like, at the end of it, he's like, cool, this is the point where people either said they never want to come back or they're going to be here all the time. I was like,
after I've just beaten them up for the last half an hour.
Because we had bodybuilders who would come in all the time and they'd be like shredded and ripped. And it's like, there'll be a few of us like a bit overweight, only just started. And then we're like, cool, we'll see how long they last. And they would roll with us and they think that they could just smash us and we would always win.
Mm.
And, you know, but then we're told, and it's like, cool, like, you can't go in anticipating all the time that you can just knock it out of the park. You need to ask for help. You need to be willing to accept it as well.
Yeah.
It's probably the bigger one.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Ask for help and be willing to accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So, mate, absolutely loved our time together. Loved the K-bombs that you dropped. Do you want to tell the guys about your lordship? Are we going to hold that for the next one?
Yeah, I feel good about that. So we were, for ages, I always look for hacks and things, like travel hacks and stuff like that. So I was reading an article about how to get upgrades on planes. And they said, well, obviously, you know, you can just pay for them, but, you know, sometimes they do leave them available. And if you have a title, like you're a doctor or a lord or any of these things, you can sometimes be offered them just by the airlines. They want to, you know, look after high profile customers. And I was like, I swear I read somewhere before that you can buy a lordship. This is at dinner in Singapore. And so I just started Googling quickly on my phone. And I was like, I can buy a lordship. Like, I can become a lord in like 15 minutes. And I was like, well, and I started looking, and there's like places in Scotland. So Glencoe is the place that I'm a lord of. And then, like, you can buy, as soon as you own a parcel of land, you're a lord. And so they've taken this one, like, must be humongous area, like, just, you know, kilometers and kilometers of space, and you can buy a portion of that, and then you become a lord. And then I was like, well, I'm only going to do this because, like, we were at this place and it was all inclusive, so I didn't have my wallet on me. I was like, if they have PayPal, I'm becoming a lord tonight. If they don't, I'm not going to do it. And I clicked the button and opted in. It was like, we take PayPal. And I was like, done. I'm coming along, guys.
Meant to be. Yeah. And how have you used it for your personal benefit so far?
I've only just started because I only got the documentation like 2 weeks ago. So I've just started, like it has on a lot of forms I've been filling out now. It's like title. And I scroll through, I'm like, Lord. So my first like trip and travel is coming up in about 2 weeks. So I've put a few of my things that my title is Lord Kim Barrett. So we'll see what the effects are. If not, everything else has been a great talking point over Christmas.
Well, stay tuned. Hopefully we can get you back another episode and you Definitely. Can share with the guys, you know, what miracles you pull with your Lordship.
Be happy to.
Cool. So anyone out there who's wanting to maybe reach out or wanting a hand with some funnels or ads, how can they find you?
Yeah. yoursocialvoice.com.au or again on all the social medias, either Real Kim Barrett is myself and Your Social Voice is the company, so feel free to reach out and see if we can help.
Excellent. So that was Lord Kim Barrett. My name is Bam Adidi from the Comeback Game, Inspired and Unstoppable. Have an amazing time. Look forward to seeing the next one. Thank you very much.
See you guys.